provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenes, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about field marketing in CW3435. Frenes is a B2B market research company working with enterprises to optimize their campaigns with account and executive insights far beyond AI. Welcome, everyone, to the Deep Dives. Today, we're plunging headfirst into the really dynamic world of field marketing. We're going to unpack the top trends, the key insights we've seen popping up on LinkedIn over calendar weeks 34 and 35.
That's CW 34 and 35.
Yeah, exactly. And our mission, really, is to give you, our fellow B2B marketing pros, a shortcut. Get you well-informed, fast, with stuff you can actually use.
And it's a really important dive to take right now. Field marketing, it just keeps changing, doesn't it? What's fascinating about looking at these LinkedIn posts is the fresh takes on balancing, you know, strategic impact with genuine customer experiences.
Right.
We'll explore how people are pushing boundaries, everything from event strategy to using some pretty cutting-edge tech, but importantly, keeping that human touch.
Okay, let's get into it. Our first big theme: strategy and best practices for impactful field marketing. Because really, success starts with a solid foundation, right? Yeah. You've got to have clear goals. Otherwise, well, you're just guessing.
Absolutely guessing. Yeah, Dean Fisher really drove this home in a post. He pointed out that, look, a lot of event marketing fails not because the execution was bad, but because there weren't clear goals.
Oh, okay.
Or they didn't really know the audience, or they just forgot about tracking. So he's stressing the basics. Define your goals, know who you're talking to, make content that actually engages them, and always, always have a strong call to action. Sounds simple.
But it's often missed. Yeah, that makes so much sense. It's not just setting goals in isolation, is it? Yeah. It's about aligning the whole approach, a sort of holistic strategic view.
Exactly. And Lisa Gregory, she takes this even further. She suggests treating event programs almost like you treat products.
Interesting. Like products.
Yeah. Give every single event a bullseye objective. Is it pipeline generation? Is it acceleration? Maybe brand awareness. Nail that down. And then build detailed event personas. These go way beyond your typical buyer personas.
So not just who they are, but why they'd come to this specific event. What are they hoping to get?
Precisely. And her takeaway was really powerful. She said, if we can't measure it, we can't prove it. And if we can't prove it, it didn't happen. That just hits home, right?
Wow, yeah.
It underlines this urgent need now to tie ROI directly to your actual sales cycle. No more fuzzy metrics.
I love that bullseye idea. So much clarity. But okay, here's a question then. What about when new opportunities pop up? Mm-hmm. Shiny objects, you know? How do you decide which ones fit the bullseye, especially when you're already swamped?
That's where discipline comes in.
Yeah.
You gotta have it. Rachel Martin advised carefully evaluating every new thing. Does it really align with your goals, your values?
Right.
She reminds us every yes you give is an investment, not just cash, but your time, your energy. Those are finite.
Yep.
And on the flip side, Lance Mutin talked about, you know, politely resetting leadership's expectations. That delicate conversation when they come back from a trade show all fired up with new ideas.
Yeah, we've all been there.
And that might not fit the strategy or the budget. It's about asking, okay, is there more budget for this?
Yeah.
Or are we expected to just stretch?
Mm-hmm.
Because doing more with less often just means doing less well.
So it boils down to strategic intentionality, deep thinking. From planning through execution, even down to staffing, every single choice has to ladder up.
Precisely. And speaking of staffing, Denise Cannon highlighted something that's maybe not sexy, but absolutely vital labor.
The people actually doing the work.
Exactly. She stressed, don't just budget for labor, design for it, plan your headcount like you plan your spend. Proactively avoid those last minute scrambles, the burnout, the costly mistakes. It just shows you need thorough planning everywhere. People are just as crucial as the budget.
Okay, so strategy's nailed down. Next big question. How do you actually captivate people when they're there? Let's move to theme two. Crafting engaging event activations in on-site experiences. This is where the magic happens.
Or where it should happen. Standing out feels more critical than ever. So much noise. What did folks like Julius Lahr say about challenging the norm here?
Julius gave a pretty stark warning. He basically said, when every event copies the same playbook, the playbook dies.
Oof, true.
He's urging us all to challenge the status quo. Ask yourself, would my event post even get a click today in that crowded feed? It's a good gut check. Pushes you to innovate past the tired formulas.
It really is. If everyone's doing the same thing, it's just wallpaper. So, okay, beyond just not being boring, what about the physical experience? Making it memorable? Well, Christine Connor talked about shifting from just building booths to building movements.
Building movements. Okay, tell me more.
The idea is people join ideas they resonate with, right? Not just structures. So think immersive storytelling, interactive moments. Let visitors actually participate in your brand story. Don't just talk at them.
Instead of just a demo, make them feel the impact.
Yeah.
I like that. That's a big mindset shift.
Huge.
And once you've got that attention, maybe even started a movement, how do you make it last? You put so much energy in, you want it to echo beyond the event days.
Right. You don't want it to just disappear. Gino Pangan offered a brilliant strategy for this. He talked about repurposing one single event activation into a 30 days of content arc.
30 days? Wow.
Yeah, not just a highlight reel. Think photos, videos, testimonials, key insights, maybe some behind-the-scenes stuff. Use all that event content for extended visibility. Keep the engagement going, capture leads long after the event itself.
That's maximizing the investment. Keep the conversation alive for a whole month. Smart.
Very smart.
So make the most of every touch point, every piece of content. But back to the actual booth, the physical space. Lots of people shared thoughts on what works and, well, what really doesn't. We've all seen those awkward booths, haven't we?
Oh, absolutely. Both Makai Brady and Carolyn Overby really emphasized booth design and staff body language. Makai Brady compared a bad booth to a coffee shop where nobody greets you. It's just off-putting.
Yeah, you just walk away.
He says, look alive, good signage, make eye contact, have an open, welcoming space. And Carolyn Overby listed common mistakes. Staff hiding behind laptops, overcrowding the booth, or designing like a one-way-in, one-way-out trap.
The trap, yes. Makes you feel stuck.
Exactly. And she even shared a very practical tip from Elizabeth Bassett Garner. Never let employees eat at the activation. It seems small, but it's about perception.
Those are super practical. It's not just avoiding mistakes. It's actively creating a positive vibe, fostering connection.
That's the key. Rosie Harriott put it beautifully. She reframed trade shows not just as places for finding clients, but for building relationships. Her advice, go to help, not to hunt.
Help, not hunt. I like that.
Yeah. Make a plan that fits your personality. Mm. Build what she called quiet visibility. Be present and value before you ever ask for anything. And Maxwell Fenton reminded us about music. Don't underestimate its power. Live music especially can totally elevate the guest experience, spark connections, much better than just a playlist.
It really sets a mood. Okay, so creating resonant experiences is key. But what about the really big brands? Those looking for even deeper engagement, maybe moving beyond the traditional trade show floor.
Yeah, for them, Jeff Youngs makes this compelling case. Consider building your own show.
Your own show, like from scratch.
Exactly. He argues it swaps rented attention for owned attention. You control the whole narrative, you curate the exact audience you want, you build incredibly valuable first-party data, and it becomes a year-round content engine.
Wow, that's ambitious.
It is. But he pointed to examples like Xbox and AWS. They've done it successfully. Huge investment, sure, but the payoff in brand control and data ownership, it can be massive.
Okay, shifting gears now. Our next theme, tech and tools. And let's face it, tech, especially AI, is changing field marketing so fast, it feels like a completely new game sometimes.
It really does. Kelly Burhop explored AI's actual impact on event tech for enterprises. Moving beyond the hype, you know? Getting practical.
Good. We need practical.
She highlighted AI's potential in, first, data and analytics, getting real-time insights into attendee behavior. Second, strategic automation, think hyper-personalized communications. And third, much better post-event ROI analysis by integrating engagement data right into your CRM and sales systems.
So it's not just collecting data, it's making it smart and actionable instantly.
Exactly. That real-time behavior understanding, personalizing on the fly. That's powerful stuff.
And speaking of ROI, you mentioned tools can actually forecast that now. Before you commit budget, that feels like a holy grail for justifying spend.
It really does. James Morris highlighted one called Bobby Leonard's ROI Calculator. It lets you predict event ROI before you even sign up to sponsor.
How does that work?
You input variables like your average order value, your typical sales cycle length, expected attendance numbers, and it models expected leads, projects your ROI, even figures out your break-even timeline.
That's huge for prioritizing.
Massive.
Yeah.
And MK Granados also chimed in on AI's power for analyzing sales data for sponsorship insights, finding product trends, account behaviors, pricing strategies, stuff that used to take weeks, now done in minutes.
So AI isn't just back-end analysis. It's shaping the front-end attendee experience too, that expectation of frictionless.
Definitely. Mark Brisci pointed out a clear shift coming. By 2026, he reckons attendees will expect an Amazon-level frictionless digital experience.
Wow, Amazon-level, that's a high bar.
It is. From registration right through check-in, his advice. Map the whole guest jury. Find every single point of friction and just cut it out. Sam Smith echoed this too, talking about adapting for 2025 with hybrid models, real-time feedback, predictive analytics for planning. It's all about anticipating needs, making it seamless.
Okay, but with all this AI, the ethics and compliance conversation gets louder, right? Especially with things like the EU AI Act.
Crucially important, yeah. Mananas Metarata offered a really useful guide for event teams on navigating the EU AI Act. He stresses transparency, especially for things like AI chatbots or session summarizers.
People need to know when they're interacting with AI.
Absolutely. And having a solid vendor checklist. Where's the data from? Any bias checks? Is there human oversight? Trust, he argues, is your ultimate ROI here. And a practical tip from Claudia Tomina. Leverage third-party platforms. Share your event data so it shows up in places like Google Maps Event Tab. Smart, low-effort visibility boost.
And where do virtual events fit in this tech-heavy, often hybrid world? Are they still a thing?
Rebecca Carmody makes a strong case for them. But her point is, embrace their distinct advantages. Don't just try to poorly imitate an in-person event online.
What advantages did she highlight?
Things like global reach, obviously lower costs, the easily recorded content, attracting maybe a more diverse audience who couldn't travel. Recognize them as different tools, virtual and in-person. They have unique strengths for different goals. They complement each other.
Okay, let's pivot one last time to people and culture. Because strategy and tech are vital, sure, but events are fundamentally about people, human connection, and the teams making it all happen.
This is so vital and often gets pushed aside. Ian Morrison spoke really powerfully about what he called the event industry's unspoken cost.
Which is?
Burnout, that high-pressure culture. He strongly advocates for prioritizing mental health, build recovery time into plans, rotate shifts properly, set real communication boundaries. His warning was stark. An industry that burns out its best talent has no future.
Oof, that's sobering, but necessary. We need to look after our people.
Absolutely critical.
So beyond just preventing burnout, what else supports people? Helps build that resilience you need in this field?
Community. John Wolfe, reflecting on the Event Marketing Congress, basically said, your tribe isn't optional, it's essential.
Your tribe.
Yeah. Collaborating with your peers, your field marketing community, it gives you perspective, it challenges you, generates energy, and builds that resilience you need when things get tough. Having that network to lean on, invaluable.
That sense of community, definitely crucial, especially as roles keep evolving. But that evolution sometimes creates tension, right? A disconnect.
Oh, for sure. Alexandra Panyakina voiced a concern. She's seeing experienced event marketers being replaced by juniors. And she questioned, well, how committed are companies, really, when they say events are our biggest marketing bet, but then D-level the roles?
Right. Does leadership truly grasp the strategic depth needed now? It's not just party planning anymore.
Exactly. And Wendy Porter helped clarify this. She defined three distinct roles: the event marketer, the strategist, and the planner. Her point, the best events need all three working together. And she asked a great question. Which of these three roles do you see most often missing on event teams? Makes you think about your own team structure.
It really highlights that expertise matters across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, it comes down to treating people well, leading effectively.
Precisely. Stephanie Chu Leong shared her philosophy for her company, Stellify Events. It's simple. Treat people exceptionally well, listen intently, anticipate needs. Relationships built on authenticity.
Authenticity, yeah.
And KCS reflected on leading sideways, you know, working with sales teams on the road, building trust, being consistent, showing up with courage, even when it's uncomfortable. It all just underlines that the human elements, trust, empathy, strong relationships, they are the absolute heart of event success. Tech can't replace that.
Wow. This has been a fantastic deep dive. It really shows just how dynamic field marketing is. So much creativity, so much strategy involved. From those bullseye objectives we talked about to building actual movements and figuring out how to use AI responsibly. Lots for B2B marketers to chew on.
I'm sure. And I think as tech keeps advancing, as that pressure for measurable ROI just keeps intensifying, maybe the core lesson here is this. The most powerful events, they aren't just the ones executed flawlessly or optimized by the smartest AI. They're the ones that are deeply felt.
Mm-hmm.
Felt, yeah. They resonate, they build real connection, they leave a lasting memory. So the big question for you listening is, how will you make sure your future events evoke that genuine connection, that lasting brand memory in this increasingly digital, data-heavy world? That's the real challenge, isn't it?
If you enjoyed this deep dive, new editions drop every 2 weeks. We also explore other crucial topics like account-based marketing, go-to-market, channel marketing, MarTech, social selling, and AI in B2B marketing. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on future insights.